Well, the Philadelphia Eagles destroyed the Kansas City Chiefs in Super Bowl 59 on Sunday, but that did not stop Fox from delivering the biggest Nielsen-measured audience on record. Of course, there's a million caveats to go along with that. We'll discuss that and much more on the newest edition of the Sports Media Watch podcast. I'm John Lewis, joined as always by Armand Brody. Please subscribe to the SMW podcast feed on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and more. So let's get started with the only big story that we could possibly lead with after the Super Bowl, and that is the Super Bowl viewership. Fox announced on Tuesday that the Super Bowl averaged 127.7 million viewers, the biggest audience ever for the game, surpassing last year's record of 123.7 million, despite the fact that it was a terrible game. It was 34-0. It was 40-6. The 40-22 final margin is not at all indicative of just how badly Kansas City was defeated, and yet a record audience. Now, there is some precedent for this. If you go back to 2014, when the Seahawks defeated the Broncos by about 35 points, that was the most watched Super Bowl ever at the time. It was an all-time record. There was no, you know, Nielsen methodology change or anything like that. It just set a new record. Sometimes that does happen. But in this particular case, I'm reasonably confident that the reason for the viewership record is methodological in nature. And so why don't we start out with, obviously, out-of-home viewing. Out-of-home viewing is really probably the biggest single change to Nielsen methodology yet. Nielsen has been building its out-of-home sample over the course of years, and right before this year's Super Bowl, expanded it to cover 100% of the country. So now you have a bigger out-of-home sample and, not surprisingly, an all-time record for the Super Bowl. You add to that first-party data for Tubi. Now, Nielsen is a third-party measurement company, and I think there's a lot of people out there kind of concerned about what happens when you start letting everyone just put their data that they've tracked, their self-reported data, into the mix. But certainly, there's a lot of differences with this particular number than even just a year ago. So I do think that methodology is the primary reason why this game set a record, because it certainly wasn't game quality. And if you're asking me, do I believe that there were more people watching a 40-6 Super Bowl in 2025 than watching a Super Bowl that went down to the final minute of overtime in 2024 with all the novelty and hype around the Taylor Swift effect? No, I don't believe that this year's Super Bowl had more viewers than a year ago. Armand, I'll bring you in on that note.
So my number was 123 million. That was my prediction from last week regarding the Super Bowl. And I was off, but this sounds like, and you and I have had this conversation on more than one occasion, it sounds like the what is not as important as the how. And I will say this, having read your stuff and having worked with you for this podcast, you've always been consistent about helping people try to make apples to apples comparisons. I remember reading sites like yours after New England-Seattle Super Bowl 49. I remember, obviously, reading about last year's game and the viewership number that the game got. So I did not expect this number that we got for last week's Super Bowl game. I did not expect that 127 million number. But if we keep sweetening the pot with more data and we keep shifting how we measure the data that is presented, then it would seem to me, John, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, it would seem to me that if we keep finding ways to sweeten the viewership numbers, we may never have a decline from one year to the next again.
Well, that's kind of what I think is going to happen. I mean, honestly, when is the Super Bowl not going to set an all-time viewership record? I mean, even before all this stuff with out of home, the Super Bowl was setting record after record after record for a lot of the 2010s, right? It wasn't until really, and this is one of the reasons why the Kaepernick stuff got so much attention in terms of the NFL's ratings, because it really wasn't until then that the Super Bowl started to drop. I think between 2010 and 2016, I think the only Super Bowl to decline was the Ravens-Niners. That was obviously with a blackout. So you know, it's not unprecedented for the NFL to reel off 5 or 6 or 7 records in a row. And, you know, as you're saying, going forward, I can't see a circumstance where the Super Bowl is going to fall short of a record again. I mean, one, maybe if KC's not there at all, right? So I would assume the Taylor Swift effect was less this year than last. That's my assumption. But, you know, certainly it's better than nothing. So next year, no KC at all, no Taylor Swift effect. The NFL has been very lucky the last several years to have the teams that have been successful. I always go back to 2018, again, that same Kaepernick era, you know, and one of the main reasons I think the ratings were down was because you didn't have any good quarterbacks. The year when your Final Four was Brady and Bortles and Case Keenum and whoever the other one
Jared
was.
Goff.
Yeah, was it Goff?
Yeah, that was, wait a minute. No, Nick Foles.
Yeah, because Nick Foles. Who was the Super Bowl MVP, right?
Yes, he was.
So to me, that is always going to be a killer. If we flash forward a year and the Super Bowl is some unimaginable pairing of uninteresting teams, right? You know, what is like, who are the least interesting good teams in the NFL? Probably the Rams and Texans.
Commanders?
Well, yeah, but they're in the same. They're in, yeah. So Rams Texans, for example, if that was your Super Bowl, yeah, I could see that maybe declining, but ultimately, there's always going to be some new thing measured. So this year you max out of home viewing. Next year it's going to be the big data, and then beyond that, population growth. I mean, population growth is another factor. This is one of the reasons why I'm one of the only people that likes to report the household rating. And that's because the household rating is really the only way of adjusting for inflation, right? There's no other measure that has had less done to it and can more easily be compared to prior years because even population growth isn't really a factor for it. And not coincidentally, no one reports the household rating or discusses it. You only see it reported a few places. This game, this Super Bowl, and this is only the Fox broadcast, so not including Telemundo, but most of the years we're talking about the main broadcast anyway. This Super Bowl had a substantially lower rating than the ones from a decade ago. So, you know, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, accurately describing the audience for this Super Bowl requires a lot of understanding of the context. And the only way to really describe these numbers accurately, in my view, is to say it is the biggest Super Bowl audience ever recorded by Nielsen, not the biggest Super Bowl audience. We don't know what that is. I suspect the biggest one was in 2015, maybe 2017, certainly even last year. But I do not believe this was the most watched Super Bowl of all time.
I'm looking at the chart. You put this exquisite chart together with Super Bowl recorded viewership numbers and ratings information. And man, that New England-Seattle game, 47.5 rating. And since then, there has not been a number to top that ratings number, that Nielsen rating number. And then, of course, the viewership number that you have that after that. But I'm with you. I don't know what to make of the data. And I don't like the fact that I'm sort of getting played by the networks here, because all they're going to do is throw out a number and we're not going to care about the fullness of the context. We're just going to see the number and go, wow, a lot of people watch that. Or wow, not a lot of people watch that, or not as many people watch that as I thought. And so we're going to lose a lot of the context. And without people like you and some of the others that are out there, and there aren't that many, quite frankly, we're not going to properly and appropriately contextualize history as it's unfolding. And that sort of bothers me a bit, but I guess that's these are the cards that we've been dealt.
Well, yeah, I mean, the reality is you're kind of fighting against PR, not PR and specifically, although, you know, but just the overall public relations thrust of entertainment, right? Everything is kind of a bit of a three-card Monte to say, hey, we're thriving, we're the best ever, everything's great, and to make sure that there's not necessarily a third party, you know, accounting of what's really going on. I don't necessarily know how much I would say Nielsen is a third party. You know, I mean, they are, to me, I mean, I guess when it comes down to it, Nielsen's primary, you know, Nielsen's primary focus is making money, not necessarily making sure that everybody knows what the data is. In fact, Nielsen's preference, pretty obviously at this point, is that nobody outside of the networks knows the numbers. The network's preference is that nobody outside of the networks knows the numbers unless they want to share them. So making, you know, I mean, look, it's just television, but it's not just television. People use Nielsen ratings to make very big arguments about society, about culture. This is polling. You know, that's really what it is. It's polling. Unlike in politics, there's no election, right? Nielsen is basically like, imagine if the Seltzer poll from right before the election was the only poll and we never got a chance to see if it was true, right? That's kind of where we are, right? Where we, there's one company doing the polling and we don't really ever have a way of measuring the accuracy of that. We can just say, hey, most watched ever. I mean, I don't want to speak too confidently because I don't know, but I mean, just based on the household rating alone, there's no way that all things being equal, you wouldn't be looking at a higher rating for any number of games between 2010 and 2015. So, yeah, I mean, we've done 15 minutes on this. We don't want to go too much longer. But to me, I do not take seriously the lofty claims about the viewership for that game.
At Planet Fitness, we're declaring it. This is the year of getting stronger. And future stronger you can get started now by saving $28 or more when you join today. You in? We have all the best-in-class equipment you could ever need to keep stepping it up. And free fitness training to help you mix up your routine. Plus, most clubs are open 24 hours. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more. Just $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends February 28th. See home club for details.
Americans love using their credit cards, the most secure and hassle-free way to pay. But D.C. politicians want to change that with the Durbin-Marshall Credit Card Bill. This bill lets corporate megastores pick how your credit card is processed, allowing them to use untested payment networks that jeopardize your data security and rewards. Corporate megastores will make more money, and you pay the price. Tell Congress to guard your card, because Americans lose when politicians choose. Learn more at guardyourcard.com.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, let's move on to some talk about the game itself, specifically Tom Brady. Obviously, you know, so much interest in Brady's performance, but as we talked about on the podcast last week, if it's a blowout, well, then it changes the calculus of the broadcast. And of course, it was a terrific blowout. What I noticed, and Armand, I'll cede most of this discussion to you, but what I noticed was that ultimately Brady did not offer very much throughout the game. He didn't screw anything up, but he didn't offer very much. And I think that the other aspect of it is he didn't offer any insights until they talked about what it's like to lose the Super Bowl. He would tell you what happened, and that's it. He wouldn't really get into the mind of anybody. He was cautious, but as we said last week, C's get degrees. He was a game manager. What do you think?
Yeah. Tom Brady did basically everything I expected him to do for this Super Bowl broadcast. I did not expect him to be overly charismatic. I did not expect him to wow you with his breakdowns and his communication skills, because he doesn't possess those to the degree of a of an A-level broadcaster, specifically an NFL game analyst. So I'm sort of looking at this differently. I've seen a lot of pieces on Brady, and a lot of them are saying the same thing. And I'm thinking to myself, well, had you listened to the Sports Media Watch podcast, Armand and John would have told you what to expect. Everything Brady did was what we expected. The analysis was somewhat shallow. There was not as much of sort of like digging deeper. There were no memorable quotes, no memorable turns of phrases. Give me an interesting way to remember something. That's really important for a broadcaster to do that. Like, you can take a phrase and say it a certain way and it sticks in the mind and really creates either a picture for the viewer or just gives them an interesting way to remember what you're saying. Brady doesn't really do that. Tom Brady has always felt to me this year, he's felt like a celebrity. And the magnitude of having Brady in the booth or even a part of your coverage, that was good for Fox. Nobody else can say Tom Brady was a part of our Super Bowl coverage. Seven-time Super Bowl champion Tom Brady was a part of our coverage. The problem is, the game has to start. The problem is, you've got to be on top of every single element. What I will give Brady this, and I tweeted this, the fact that he could incorporate some commentary about meetings he had had with the players. There was, I think, the tush-push play in the first half. Brady references the fact that he had spoken with Chris Jones about how difficult the play is to defend. I was like, yes, this is color commentary. But he's not had a chance to do that this year because of the restrictions. If he had the opportunities to do that more, it gives him that much more to say, to add to the story of the game. And because he's not had the opportunities to do that throughout the course of the year, the broadcasts have always suffered. In this instance, I honestly think Brady comes out okay. Why? Because there was no big moment in the game that required Brady to meet the moment, and he failed. The game was over early, very early. And they spent a lot of time hanging on to the, well, you know, Patrick Mahomes, 28-3. And it was pretty apparent that when the Chiefs went 3 and out in the second half, this game was over. So what you got from Brady was a broadcaster who has been average to above average at best. A lot of the replays that he narrated was just more so of him telling us what we were seeing. Maybe not as much of the how, maybe not as much of the why as we would like, but to me, it was really to be expected.
Yeah, as you said, I mean, everything you said is accurate on that front. I mean, just telling you what you're seeing and not really providing an analysis, I think, is kind of one of the toughest parts of it. And, you know, you could also kind of feel like Burkhardt is maybe trying to, you know, hold his hand almost. I actually kind of feel like Burkhardt wasn't as effective or as comfortable working with Brady the whole year as he was working with Greg Olsen, who was his partner for multiple years, even before they got the number one gig.
Can I speak to that? Because here's something I don't like. Brady's star power overwhelms the booth. You almost feel like the way Fox has presented him, and because of who he is, it's like his star power suffocates the booth, the broadcast. And I do think it affects the chemistry they can have because Brady feels two times or three times as important as everybody else. What was cool about Burkhardt and Olsen is that they felt like two just ordinary guys. And that was even a part of their appeal. There were articles written about this. Oh, we knew each other because Burkhardt used to do games, I think involving either Olsen or Olsen's father, who was a coach from high school. They felt like just these two everymen. And there was a chemistry there because Olsen was not so much bigger than Burkhardt, but That's not the case here. Brady's star power is so significant that even the jokes that they make, they fall flat. Brady made the joke about Kevin Hart. Kevin Burkhardt had no idea what Tom Brady was talking about. And it's not that those kinds of things aren't good for the booth. They are. But if Brady is in one atmosphere and Burkhardt is in another, even when they try to come together and say things that like normal broadcast partners would say, it falls flat. And so I think that's another thing that we saw even at the Super Bowl, and it's something that we've seen throughout the course of the season.
No one really talked about the chemistry between Burkhardt and Brady. Do you think they have any chemistry?
No, not much. I think Brady has not moved from celebrity to broadcaster. When Brady's in the booth, he feels like a celebrity. He feels so big. But here's the deal. And John Madden used to say this all the time. Nobody's bigger than the game. And John Madden would say all the time, well, you can make all these preparations. You can talk all this talk. You can have all the hoopla and the hype. He would say, a game's got to break out. And you've got to get into the flow of the game as a broadcaster. And Brady has never fully embraced that. It's never quite fully felt like Tom Brady, the broadcaster, was talking to me. It felt like Tom Brady, the superstar, Tom Brady, the celebrity, Tom Brady, this really famous guy, this really good looking guy who knows how to wear a $600,000 or $700,000 watch during the Super Bowl. It felt like he was talking to me and not the broadcaster. And the Super Bowl was really par for the course of what we've seen throughout the season.
Yep. And now we have how many ever more years of Brady in the booth for him to make those adjustments? I mean, do I think that we'll see anything different next year? I can't even imagine. I know he'll be there, but I have a tough time imagining Brady even being on games next year. I mean, it just doesn't seem doable, but we know he'll be there. We know that Inside the NBA will be on ESPN, even though that doesn't seem like it'll happen either, right? But hey, I mean, as you said, he does seem more like a guest analyst than an actual Fox employee.
And where was Greg Olson? Your pregame show is 5.5 hours. You mean to tell me Greg Olson could not have done a segment with the guys at the desk or an interview? I was thinking, why not have Olson and Gronk do a tight end segment about Kelce and Goddard? Or Brady is your most famous voice, but Olson's your most respected. Why was he not even a part of the coverage? Now, assuming he didn't choose to be separate, where was Greg Olson? I thought just having him, I mean, I know the pregame show is a marathon and you probably didn't watch much of it, if any of it, but I do think Fox dropped the ball. They treat Olson like he's a mistress. Like, he's still your guy. He's still doing playoff games when Fox has more than one. He's still your number two analyst. If something happens to Tom Brady, Olson's back in there. I thought Fox missed an opportunity there by not having Olson anywhere part of the broadcast as well.
Well, they've snubbed him a lot this year unnecessarily. When CBS put, you know, Romo in the booth instead of Phil Simms, they kept Phil Simms in the studio. And, you know, obviously that means you get to do the Super Bowl. To me, it doesn't seem like Fox has any long-term plans for Greg Olson, which is kind of weird. I mean, ultimately, seems like a waste. They developed him for years from the time he was playing. And then as soon as Brady came in, you know, we've talked about that a million times. But I don't really know what their plans are long term. They've got a lot of turnover coming in on that studio. I don't think that studio team will be the same for 2029. And as I've said multiple times last week, I don't know that Fox has many more Super Bowls to go after 2029, because I don't really know what the future of the broadcast network over there at Fox really holds. The only thing Murdoch values is Fox News, and they're not going to air a Super Bowl on there after the Fox Broadcast Network goes kaput. So we'll see if they put in enough investment into the Fox Broadcast Network to keep that thing from going the way of the CW, because the NFL is going to opt out of its media deals, and these streamers are a real threat, and they make more sense for Sunday afternoon games than the broadcast networks do. I mean, granted, if you were to have the streamers come in and just put all the games regionally available, then you're stepping all over a Sunday ticket. But I do think there's a real threat from those streamers for the Sunday afternoon windows coming up.
And I'll say this quickly. Fox has to get younger. Jimmy Johnson's 81. Terry's in his 70s. You got to get younger. It's time to start giving Julian Edelman and some of your younger guys more space on that main desk. And I just don't think Gronk brings a whole lot. I mean, I was watching their studio halftime show, and I'm like, you guys aren't saying anything. Matt Ryan was so good. J.J. Watt, so strong for CBS. You've got guys who are 45 and younger who are really establishing themselves as prominent NFL voices. Fox has got to catch up or they'll be left behind.
Well, Fox let Amazon create the new generation of NFL on Fox, right? Yeah. Because that team that Amazon has is what Fox should have.
Mm-hmm.
Young, kind of a little bit, you know, irreverent. You know, the Fox attitude, whatever that still means in 2025. You know, to me, that is what they should have had. And they've, you know, this is kind of the danger with inside the NBA as well. You know, it's great nostalgia. People who've been watching it from the beginning enjoy it, but eventually you lose your relevance as well.
That's true.
All right, let's wrap up here with a few other stories from the weekend. Not just the NFL, of course. You also had the NBA and the Luka Doncic trade. Finally, Luka debuting for the Lakers Monday night. That game had about 2 million viewers on ESPN. Not a massive audience, but certainly one of the better ones this NBA season. And you really wonder what the drawing power is going to be for these Luka and LeBron Lakers as the season goes along. If the Lakers are actually really good, and right now I believe they're tied in the loss column with Denver for third and placed fourth in the West. I mean, this is a franchise that hasn't had home court advantage in a series since 2012. Because the 1 year since then that they were a high seed, there was no home court in the bubble. So if you could actually get a quality Lakers squad, they don't have to go to the finals. They don't have to win the title. But if they are actually able to be a real factor, and Golden State as well with a Jimmy Butler trade, if they're able to get into the playoff mix, could be a decent postseason after a shaky regular season for the NBA.
Yeah, the NBA needs a boost. Their ratings have stabilized. I know we had all that noise early in the season. Oh, the NBA is down, and why, and the social unrest and the issues, and everybody loves to latch their storylines and narratives onto whatever the NBA ratings are. But I like the fact that at least there was a jolt there. You get this massive and still shocking deal sending Luka to L.A. and Anthony Davis to Dallas. You can only hope that L.A. ends up in a prominent spot in the postseason, conference finals, NBA finals, because if it's left up to teams like Oklahoma City, Memphis, and Denver, who aren't really ratings draws, the NBA is going to end up sort of looking at some of their finals ratings again this year and saying, we're not terribly pleased with it, in my opinion.
No, you make a great point. I will say, as long as the finals goes 6 or 7, you'll be fine no matter who's in it, at least relative to the last couple of years. You could end up with the most watched finals since 2019 pretty easily just with a 7-game series. So I wouldn't worry too much if it's OKC as long as it's a competitive finals. So I do think that obviously you want the Lakers to go far. I mean, second round might be as good as it gets. There's a lot of really tough teams in that Western Conference. Let's go NBA adjacent here. Obviously still NBA, but more about the TV analysts. And Hubie Brown had his final broadcast over the weekend. It was an interesting weekend, a lot of emotion in sports TV over the weekend. Dick Vitale made his return to the air at Clemson, and obviously Dickie V. Dickie V's like the John Boehner of sports TV. I mean, he is a big-time crier. You knew Dickie V was going to be crying when he came back. Hubie and Mike Green were emotional. Jimmy Johnson was emotional. I think I missed somebody. But I thought that was an interesting thing. I mentioned it on the Richard Deitch podcast I did this week as well. I just thought it was an interesting weekend with a lot of on-air tears that you don't typically see.
Yeah, I watched quite a bit of the Hubie game. I've meant a lot to me to watch it because some of my earliest memories of watching the NBA are when Stockton, Dick Stockton and Hubie Brown did games, not for CBS. I wasn't born in the 80s, but for TNT when they were together back in the day for TNT with Craig Sager and Brian Burwell and that crew and Vern Lundquist and Doc Rivers were doing games for TNT back then. So those are some of my earliest memories of watching the NBA on television as a young boy. And Hubie just meant so much to the game. It was really nice to see him get that tribute. ESPN really went all out. And think about it. I mean, a man who's dedicated so much of his life to the game and has just really been, people forget, he's been at ESPN 20 years. And I love the fact that even Mike Tirico came on and he was emotional. Maybe that was the other person you were talking about. But Tirico had mentioned that he had already cried three times during the week before the game. But just really stood out to me. And, of course, Dick Vitale, so glad after everything he's been through, four cancers, 85 years old, still kicking, still energetic, still you just want him there. Just to see him there with Dave O'Brien. And then they gave him another analyst, which was a really good idea, Corey Alexander, who follows the ACC as closely as probably any analyst out there now. Just a really smart idea and just a good, it's good vibes, good feels.
Yep. The other emotional analyst over the weekend was Randy Moss, who made his return from cancer as well. So like I said, just a lot of tears shed on a very interesting weekend at sports TV. Before we go, let's talk about something that broke last week. That would be Major League Baseball reportedly warning ESPN that it's willing to walk away from the network if it opts out of its contract. But where is MLB going to go? One, ESPN is fully in the right to want to renegotiate its contract. Nobody told Major League Baseball to sell rights to games, exclusive rights to streamers for pennies on the dollar. Nobody told MLB to negotiate those deals that they negotiated with Apple and with Roku. And so, hey, ESPN looks at those deals and says, we're paying what for what? Understandably. And where exactly is MLB going to go? Because when you devalue your rights, which MLB did, how are you going to get somebody to pay what ESPN is paying, $550 million a year? You're not getting that money from anybody. No matter how good the ratings are, you've set your price really low. So I don't know what MLB is going to do to really act on any threat to ESPN.
Yeah, $550 million from ESPN. Meanwhile, Roku's deal is just $10 million a year. Apple's deal is $85 million a year. So ESPN is looking around and they're saying, all we give you is Sunday night baseball. We don't do Monday night baseball anymore. We don't do Wednesday night baseball. They'll do the occasional special game, but it's really Sunday night baseball and the playoff games, the wild card games, and that's it. And so ESPN's looking around saying, hey, why are we paying you guys this much money? It is a bit concerning, though, because you do want to see Major League Baseball, especially having had the momentum from the Yankees-Dodgers series. You want to see the league just stabilize. You want to see MLB stabilized. And there's been so much turmoil and so much turnover with these local channels and how fans of teams in specific areas have access. You've got MLB producing some of the games because there's been all these disputes with local channels, and it's been hard for fans to get to their games. Fans want to know, where can I find my games? And if ESPN is not going to continue with Major League Baseball, it's one more thing that fans have to worry about in their quest to make sure they can consistently find their baseball. So if I'm a baseball fan, I've definitely got my antennas up and just really curious to see what happens here. It's hard for me to see this continuing after this opt-out, John.
I think MLB, they're going to have their bluff called. They're not going to get $550 million for that package from anywhere else. So I can't see them really opting out. And again, I think MLB rights are worth, $500 million a year, sure. But MLB is the one that sold exclusive rights to some of its games to streamers for ridiculously small sums of money. I mean, that was their decision. I mean, come on, we're talking about $100 million a year, and it's certainly not chump change, but I mean, for exclusive weekly national windows, why not negotiate that with TBS and ESPN? Well, I mean, I guess ESPN didn't want the weeknight games anymore, but like, the whole reason ESPN gave up Monday and Wednesday Night Baseball was because it was not exclusive. So I don't really know what they're doing there nationally, but we'll see how that develops over time. A couple of other small things. Obviously, the Olympics is coming up next year. NBC is planning to do the same thing that it did in Paris, and that would be to carry the most important events live in the afternoon. Also, the NFL and ESPN back talking about the possibility of ESPN assuming control over NFL media. And obviously, with the ESPN flagship streaming service coming up, that could be pretty interesting. If you have to get the ESPN flagship to watch Red Zone, that's going to be very interesting. So a lot of sports media topics, certainly as we move into the NFL offseason. And the NFL offseason means a lot of hoops, a lot of baseball, and everything else in sports that that isn't NFL football. Believe it or not, there is sports outside of there is life outside of the National Football League as we move on into the offseason. Armand, thank you as always for joining me. Thank all of you out there for listening, and we'll be back with more stuff down the line.
Tanger Outlets, find hundreds of brands at unbeatable value. Save big on outerwear, must-have handbags, active essentials, classic favorites, footwear, and more up to 70% off. Shop Nike Factory Store, Coach, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. All the best brands, all on sale, every day. Only at Tanger Outlets.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.